Turn to Psalm 139 in your Bible. We're going to be studying from that in the course of the hour tonight. It's good to be with you this evening. And I want to say something in the beginning. I may say it at the end also. I presented some of these thoughts a few weeks ago at home. And after it was over, one of the men took me aside and said, "Why did you preach that?" I said, "To give glory to God." And I hope that in the course of the study tonight, you will be able to say, yes, that was a lesson from Psalm 139 that gave glory to God. Psalm 139 is a favorite psalm of so many people, but it's also a beautiful and exquisite piece of literature. It's just, everything about it is just a wonderful psalm. I want to read the entire psalm, but I'm going to do it in sections if you'll allow me to do that. And I'll even let you help me a little bit if you'd like. I'll let you make a comment or two along the way. Psalm 139, I want to begin with the first six verses. And I'm going to say in advance that the first six verses will demonstrate that Jehovah is to be glorified because He is the omniscient God. Omniscient is the idea that He knows everything. Omni is the word all, and then science, to know. So God knows all. Let's read those first six verses. And when I'm done, I'm going to ask you, what verse do you think is a key phrase or a key word in these first six verses? Let's read. "O Lord, You have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thought from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down, and are intimately acquainted with all my ways. Even before there is a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, You know it all. You have enclosed me behind and before, and laid Your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is too high. I cannot attain to it." David says that he cannot reach the kind of knowledge that God has. Did you see something in there that you thought was maybe a key phrase or a key line in those six verses? Give me a little help there. What did you see? Yes, ma'am.
I would say the very first verse, "Search me and know me."
Yeah, that very first verse, "You've searched me and known me." What does that tell you? That God knows everything about David. And God knows everything about you. He knows every circumstance of your life. Have you been going through pain? God knows that. Are you in a time of joy in your life? God knows about that too. A time of hardship? God knows everything about you. He knows your every thought and your every action. Then the next section I want to look at is verses 7 through 12. And again, I'm going to say in advance that those six verses, 7 through 12, God is to be exalted for His all-seeing omnipresence. And the idea of omnipresence, well, it's like omniscient. It's, again, all, and then the idea of presence. And God is aware of everything that happens in every place. He begins this section, David begins this section in verse 7 by saying, "Where can I go from Your Spirit? Or where can I flee from Your presence? If I ascend to heaven, You are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, You are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there Your hand will lead me, and Your right hand will lay hold on me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night. Even the darkness is not dark to You, and the night is as bright as the day. Darkness and light are alike to You." This is magnificent language. And here David even uses hyperbole to speak of God's presence. And that's a good thing, because you cannot be in a place where God doesn't know about your circumstance. God's presence can be with you wherever you may be, whatever you may be doing. Was there a verse, though, a line in that, a phrase that stuck out to you? Someone give me some help on that. Yeah, Randy.
Yeah. That's exactly what Jonah was trying to
Yeah, Jonah was trying to run away from God as though he could hide from God. Could not do that. And, you know, when you look at where can I flee from your presence, the text in Jonah says that Jonah went to flee from the presence of the Lord, which is really impossible. Any other thought, anything that stuck out to you in this psalm, in these six verses? All right, I'm going to read the next section. And let's see if I can make this thing work this time. There it goes. God is to be magnified for his power as creator. I'm reading verses 13 to 16, only four verses this time. He says, "For you formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them." What part of that short reading stands out to you? What do you see there that you find impressive? Somebody help me. Yes, sir. Yeah, Rick is making the point that there's a good argument here to answer someone who might think that abortion is right. Here, God knew David while he was still unformed, while he was still in the womb. There's so much you could see there. You know, the two sections prior to this section magnify God for his perfect knowledge. They celebrate God's thoughts, how that he knows our actions. And what's the reason for his wonderful knowledge of us? What's the reason? It's because he's our maker. That's right. One of the sisters said it. He is our creator. He's the maker of man. And man is made how? What did the psalm say about how he is made? Fearfully and wonderfully made. Now, in the next two verses, hear how prized these thoughts are to King David. He ponders these things and thinks about how wonderful they are. "How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would outnumber the sand. When I awake, I am still with you." David expresses the value of God's thoughts to him that every morning gives to David a fresh occasion to adore God. He speaks in the last line here, when I awake, I am still with you. I think David goes to sleep with thoughts of God. Other psalms say that. And he awakens in the morning with these same thoughts. But then when we come to the next section, we might be shocked by the language, because here it's about enemies. And it's very clear that God's enemies were also David's enemies. In verses 19 to 22, "Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, men of bloodshed, for they speak against you wickedly," that is, against God, "and your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with the utmost hatred. They have become my enemies." You see, just as God has gracious and precious thoughts toward those who are obedient to his will, God also has thoughts and purposes toward those men who persist in disobeying his will. Now, this doesn't mean that God hates the souls of the wicked. We know John 3:16, God loved the whole world. And God would love nothing more than to see these wicked converted, to see them turn from their wicked ways and to do what is right. And that would be David's desire also. But the point that he's making here, he says, these men have become my enemies. Enemies of God were enemies of the man of God. And then the psalm closes with an appeal. And this, I think, is my favorite part of the psalm. It's an appeal to God to examine him, that is, to examine David's own heart. He said, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there is anything hurtful in me, and lead me in the everlasting way." He wants God to examine him, and that if something is wrong in his life, he wants to make change in that part of his life. You see, David does not want to be counted among those men that he's just spoken of, those wicked men. David knows that God knows all, and the great judge, he wants the great judge to search his heart, and if there's something wicked within him, he wants to change. Well, that's just a brief overview of that psalm. But for the remainder of our study, I want to zoom in on one statement where David said, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made," that's Psalm 139 and verse 14. And reading that entire verse again, he says, "I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well." Another translation says, "I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." When we look at ourselves, when we look at our own lives, when we look at our own bodies even, we see reason to give glory to God, to give thanks and praise to God. Over the past 15 months, what have we done? We've all talked about the coronavirus. We don't like it. We hate what it has done to us. We despise the restrictions that are associated with it. There's nothing about it that we like. But I would ask you this question. At any point, have we looked at the virus from a positive point of view with respect to our bodies that are fearfully and wonderfully made? We can't say anything good about the virus, but we can say something good about our own bodies made by God. And I think we can find something in this whole affair, and while we're maybe getting on the good side of it, we still got a little ways to go, I think we can find something in this whole affair for which to give thanks. And I'll tell you what I think about Psalm 139. I think it's an invitation. I think it invites us to look at ourselves. And not just our lives, but he says, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." We should look at ourselves, how we're made. This psalm begs us, take a look at how you are made. Something fearful, something wonderful. You were made by your Creator. And you need to be cognizant of the wonderful things that he has incorporated within your makeup. And so that's what we're going to do for the next few minutes. And I'm only going to spend a very few minutes on this part of it. But I want to talk for a moment about your immune system. An immune system that was designed by God as your body's defense against infection. When germs like the coronavirus or some other germ or bacteria, when germs invade your body, they attack and they multiply. Now, they might enter through your mouth or nose, but they don't stay there. They spread throughout your whole body, and the whole body is sick. But God has designed a system to fight against that. Now, it's this invasion of germs that causes illness, but God has designed an immune system to fight infection. You probably already know that your blood is made up of two basic kinds of cells. You have red blood cells, and the red blood cells, they circulate throughout your body carrying oxygen to various tissues and various organs within your body. That's their function, to supply oxygen. But then you've got the white blood cells, and the white blood cells are also known as immune cells. These are designed to fight infection. And God designed your blood that way. Don't forget that everything we're going to say in the next 6 or 7 minutes as we go through this part of the lesson is about how God has fearfully and wonderfully made your immune system. Now, the white blood cells, they are the heroes in the fight against infection. And you have three fundamental kinds of white blood cells. What we're going to call, for purposes of our lesson, M cells, B cells, and T cells. And those are very specific types of white blood cells that have very different functions. First of all, you have what are called macrophage white cells. And then the B cells are technically known as B lymphocyte white cells. And then the same with the T. You have T lymphocyte white cells. Now, what do each of these do? And remember, this is a system that is designed by God. And when a germ has invaded your body, God has a three-phase system for fighting that germ. And I'm going to say right now that that's something that's been designed. Keep that idea in mind, that it's something that is designed. Now, what do these macrophage white cells do? Well, their purpose is to swallow the germs. Wherever the germs are in your body, these white cells produce and they go after them. And they swallow them, they digest them, and they leave behind what are called antigens. And so the macrophage cells go to work and they digest the germs, and then when they're gone, here you've got these antigens that are left behind. Now your body looks at these antigens and says, okay, these things are dangerous. We've got to do something with them. And this is where the B cell brigade comes into play. Because what it does is produce antibodies that attack antigens, okay? And so here come the B cells. They attack these and they're producing antigens. They're destroying the antigens, producing antibodies throughout your body. And this is part of what makes you well. That's the second phase of your immune system. But you've got a third phase where the T lymphocyte white cells come into play. And these are what are called killer cells. And that's killer in a good sense, because what they do, these T lymphocyte white cells, they search throughout your body and they find the cells in your tissue and in your organs that have been infected, and they kill those cells that have been infected. And so you've got the T cells that follow the B cells which swallowed up the antigens and produced antibodies. So you got two things here that kind of sound alike. Antibodies, which are good, antigens, which are bad. The antibodies attack the antigens and destroy them. That's fundamentally what happens. Now, the moment that your body encounters the invasion of a germ, these white blood cells go to work. And it can take several days for them to be able to create the right kind of white blood cells, because you could have any number of different kinds of white blood cells. Why does it have to produce different kinds? Well, because every infection is different. Right now, we're learning about strains of coronavirus that are different than we had a year ago. And so if your body encounters that new strain, it's got to then produce macrophage white cells, B lymphocyte white cells, and T lymphocyte white cells that are peculiar to that strain in order to destroy it. So it takes a few days for your body to produce the right kind of white blood cells. God designed your body to do that. Your immune system is amazing. Every infection is different, but God designed your body to produce the right kind of blood cells to fight the infection that you have. Now, sometimes people don't get well. They get an infection, whether it's coronavirus or flu or some other virus or some other germ. Sometimes people don't get well and they pass from this life. And why? Because sometimes they have a compromised immune system. You've heard people talk about that. Well, this person had a compromised immune system. They had secondary or underlying problems. And what happens is the germ or the virus just overwhelms the immune system, and the immune system cannot produce enough of the right kind of white blood cells in order to fight the infection. But under normal circumstances, the white blood cells, they get involved, they make you well, and you feel good after a couple of weeks if you've had coronavirus or flu. And by the way, this is not peculiar to coronavirus. This is just the way your immune system works. If you've got a particular strain of influenza, this is the way your body is going to work. And I have to say to you, someone says, well, Max, this is awfully complicated. What I've given you is really an oversimplification of what happens, because When we get to talking about these T lymphocyte white cells, how that they attack and destroy infected cells within your body, there are actually five different kinds of T lymphocytes that are all working together to accomplish this. It's extremely complex, this system, and it was designed by God. And the interesting thing is that after you are well, your body remembers. Your immune system remembers what it's learned about how to protect your body against this disease. This is why when a person has gone through the coronavirus, they're unlikely to get it again, even after they're exposed to it, because here's what they've still got in their body. They still have these B cells that are producing antibodies if these antigens should show up. They've still got T cells, which would attack and destroy any infected cells. They've got these antibodies. They've got a built-in defense system now and that remembers what this disease was like and now has an army of fighters that can go after it if the disease tries to invade the body again. So these T cells actually remain in your body as memory cells. And if they detect that something is wrong, they call up the B cell brigade to produce antibodies and keep you well. This was all planned and designed by God. Now, some of you follow the Indianapolis Colts or the Chicago Bears or maybe even the Cincinnati Bengals. In football, they often say that the best defense is what? Good offense. And what you've got here is a defense that works on offense because it attacks. If this germ comes back to your body is going to go into attack mode and provide a good game of defense. Now, someone says, well, where do vaccines come into all of this? And let me just say this in the beginning. The decision to get the vaccine, whether you're talking about Moderna or Pfizer or whatever, that has turned out to be a very personal, very private decision. And I think we have to respect that. And so I'm making no attempt tonight to influence anyone with respect to that very personal matter. But the vaccine is where your immune system, which is designed by God, interacts with that which was designed by man. And simply put, what the vaccines do, they help develop immunity by pretending to your immune system that you have the disease. And so it's kind of tricking your immune system into thinking, yeah, we've got the disease, what do we have to do? We have to produce T cells, B cells, and these antigens, and let's fill the body with those. And your body then pretends, the vaccine pretends, that your body has the coronavirus without that germ ever being in your body. And so this imitation infection causes your immune system to produce the T cells, B cells, and antibodies. And once this imitation process is completed, and it takes about 2 weeks after you get your shot for your body to produce these memory cells, these T cells, they're waiting. These T cells are waiting. This disease shows up in your body. Okay, we go to work right away. We call on the B cell brigade and we're going to start producing antibodies and we're not going to get sick now. And that's just how it works. Just really pretty simple. The T cells and the B cells learn how to fight the infection on the imitation. But when the real germ shows up, they know exactly what to do. And it's interesting that the vaccine doesn't really fight the disease by itself. All it really does is prepare your own immune system, the system designed by God, to fight the germ if it shows up. Now, I want to say to you this evening that I am not a doctor, though my initials are MD. I'm not a doctor. I don't play a doctor on TV, and I won't play a doctor in this pulpit. I'm not a doctor, but I'm a reader. And I want to say to you that what I presented to you is information that is readily available to anyone who would read. But this is amazing information. And I've not done this tonight to teach you just about the medical facts of how your immune system does something. This is about God. And you need to see that, that this is about how God designed your body. Now, I want to go back to our psalm that we began with. Psalm 139, verse 14, I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And I would ask you, from that little illustration, that simple chart, can you see that you're fearfully and wonderfully made? Can't you see there's something wonderful about that? How God has designed your body to fight infection? Wonderful are your works. And David says that my soul knows it very well. I want to leave you with five things to take home tonight. 5 points. And I would ask you, can anyone believe that such a complex immune system came into being by accident? It just won't work. This system shows careful design. And whenever you see design, what do you know is behind it? A designer. Thank you. This system, our immune system, shows careful design and planning. And when you see planning, what do you know is behind it? You've got a great planner, don't you? You've got something or someone that planned it. Listen, Psalm number 100 in verse 3 is an interesting psalm. You probably know the psalm. It simply points out who our maker is. God is our maker. Psalm number 100 and in verse number 3. It says, know that the Lord himself, he is God. It is he who made us and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. In the middle line of that verse, it is he who made us and not we ourselves. He made us, we didn't make ourselves, and evolution didn't make us either. Because all these systems working together in our body, they all show careful design and planning. Random forces of evolution did not make us. And wouldn't it be nuts if someone went on TV, someone from Pfizer or Moderna, and they're on one of these news shows where they get interviewed and they stick the mic in the phone, fella's face and says, well, tell us about this new vaccine that you have designed and planned. Oh, well, you know, it just sort of happened out of nowhere. We don't know. We never designed anything. It just happened. And people say, come on, tell me the truth. You know that months of planning and design and billions of dollars went into this work. No one believes that random forces, random materials, just produced that vaccine. And yet, the vaccine must interact with a system that is far more complex than itself. Random forces, not a chance. And so, our immune system shows careful design and planning. And the sad thing is all across the country and around the world, our kids are being taught in school that it all happened by accident. Everything happened by accident. We're an accident. It's a sad thing. We don't have time to talk about that more. Here's the second thing I want you to take home. The marvel of the human body is beyond astounding. Can you see how you were wonderfully made? We're amazed at these physicians and scientists who developed the vaccine. And it was developed in record time. Just over a year ago, there was a plan put in place to develop this in record time. And all over television, they laughed at the idea. Couldn't be done. Couldn't be done. Not this year, not next year. It'll take 3 to 5 years, maybe 7 years to develop a vaccine. It can't be done. But these amazing scientists and physicians did it in like 9 months. Are we amazed at them? We ought to be. But we ought to be amazed at the great physician, the great scientist who developed our bodies. The human body is a work of a being far, far above anything that we know, far wiser than mere man. As we observe the workings of our own body, we're surprised and we're amazed at how our bodies are designed. We're amazed at what we discover. David, within his own soul, he knew very well about the wonderful works of God. When you look at that, that second and third line, wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. I think it's interesting that David says, my soul knows very well about this. And yet, we know so much more than David. The science of anatomy and all the things related to it were unknown to men like David. But David knew enough to marvel at God's creation. That's what David did. And that tells us something about ourselves. We ought to marvel at the human body because it is beyond astounding. And then take this third thing home. Our hearts should be struck with awe and reverence. I think it's easy to understand what wonderfully made means. Our bodies are indeed a wonder. They're a wonderful thing. There's so many things to say about them. But what does he mean when he says, I am fearfully, I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. What does he mean by that word fearfully? That word fearfully means to be struck with awe or even to frighten. And I think there's a sense in which when David looks at how he's made, there's a sense in which he's even a bit frightened at God. That a God who could make what we are is just beyond anything else that we know. We know so much more than David. But that word that is used there is related to awe and to reverence. And my best understanding of the part where it says fearfully made, my best understanding is that when David thinks of creation, his heart is struck with awe and reverence toward the amazing Creator who has made the human body. And listen, folks, the more we learn about the human body, the more we are impressed with the handiwork of its maker. Our bodies are a breathtaking exhibit of God's incomprehensible skill, His power, His knowledge, and His goodness. Did you ever think about how the human body is an expression of the goodness of God? Someone says, I don't see how would that show the goodness of God? God designed your body for healing. And this simple illustration that we've shown about the blood cells, that's a little bit of a demonstration about how God designed your body for healing. How it can even heal itself. God designed it that way. And listen, if you didn't have those white blood cells, the first time you encountered a dangerous germ, you know what would happen? I can tell you what your relatives would do. They'd be planning a funeral because these germs would get in your body and they would simply kill you. You know, someone goes to the doctor and they take a blood test and says, oh, your white blood cells are up. Well, thank God for white blood cells, and thank God for the fact that they're up, because it says you've got an infection and your body is going to work battling the infection. And we want the white blood cells to go down because that says, hey, we've done our job. We can now take a break. Your body was designed for healing. You know, about 8 or 9 weeks ago, I got a pretty serious cut on the right side of my thumb. Someone says, well, I don't see anything. You can look closely and you still won't see anything. You know why? It's because the body healed itself. It was designed that way. And listen, I never thought that a thumb, just a little cut on the side, could bleed so profusely. But it did. And someone says, okay, it bled. You know what that bleeding does? I cut myself outside. Probably got dirt and grit in it. That bleeding helps to wash out the wound. Did you ever think of that? That's the purpose. One of the purposes of bleeding. But you know what God did? God said, now I'm not going to let this thing bleed for long because I have developed an inhibitor within your blood that's going to cause your blood to clot. It'll bleed for a little bit, but as it gets exposed to the air, I think it's probably bled enough out of that little cut, and so there's a clotting factor that makes it stop. Now, what would happen if you cut your thumb and it's bleeding profusely, if God had not designed your blood with that clotting factor? Well, that would eventually stop. That's right, it would eventually stop and you'd be dead on the floor. Because a little cut on your thumb, as long as your heart keeps beating, it'll keep pumping blood out of that cut. But God designed your body for healing. Think about that. You're fearfully and wonderfully made. Don't you wish they made cars that would be like that? You know, you park out here, you try not to get a door ding, but, you know, some old guy like Max, he can't see very well, and he scratches the side of your car as he's backing out. Well, wait 4 to 6 weeks, and that scratch will heal itself. Get a dent in the fender. It'll heal itself. Or you're driving down the road, and suddenly you hear a terrible knocking noise, and that means a rod is knocking in your engine. Keep driving it. It'll heal itself. No. See, the stuff that we make, they don't heal themselves. God has designed our bodies so that in so many circumstances, the body heals itself. Fearfully, wonderfully made. And when I say that God's creation, the human body, is an exhibit of God's goodness, that's it. God doesn't want us to bleed to death. He doesn't want us to die of every germ that comes along. And so God's goodness made our bodies so that they had healing factors put within them. And so what does that mean to us? That we absolutely must give praise and thanks to our Maker. The translation I'm using tonight, the New American Standard Bible, says, "I will give thanks to you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made." Give thanks to God. The old King James Version says, "I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." God deserves praise, and God deserves our thanksgiving. That's David's point. And I said in the beginning, when we first began to look at verse 14, that this psalm invites us to look at the human body. Look at the human eye, how it works. You know, I've got the new iPhone 12 Pro Max. It's got 3 camera lenses on the back. Did you know that all 3 of those camera lenses work on the same basic design as the human eye? And those cameras, they had designers and planners just like the eye does. When you look at the ear, how your ears work. Again, design and planning. That's why I say that Psalm 139 just begs us to look at ourselves and the wonder of our own bodies and then to praise the God who made us. And so we offer to God thanksgiving, reverence, and we offer to God our obedience, because bottom line, that's what we need to give Him. And then finally, we must live lives worthy of the one who made us. You know, when you look at those last 2 verses of Psalm 139 again, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there's any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way." David says, if there's something wrong in me, I want to know it, because I want you to lead me in the right way. I want you to lead me in the everlasting way. And so, when we know what David knew, we ought to respond like David responded. Because one day, the awesome God who made us will call us to give account for how we live, how we've lived our lives on this earth. He will call us even to give account for what we have done with our own bodies and so many other things. If tonight you're not ready for that day of account, you need to prepare yourself and do it now. If you're not a Christian, why not become a Christian tonight? If you're a Christian but you've wandered away and you've been living in a way that dishonors God, come back home. Give God the honor and praise and thanksgiving that He deserves, and He'll bless you for that. If you need to respond to the gospel call, we invite you to come now as we stand and as we sing.